This is the one with Gatwick Airport. Aliens armed with bullet vibrators and a conspiracy centered around gap year postcards. It's called to the Faceless Ones. Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space, counting Daleks, Dalentud, and the Cybertronic race.
Santarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales.
Who back when?
Reviewing all of who there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode C035 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin. Yes, I am. And seriously, holy smokes, this is the 35th Classic Who review that we've dropped. That's pretty amazing with, what is it, like 2 seasons worth of 8th Doctor Adventure audiobooks, and I think we're recording the 28th New Who review tonight. In fact, right after I stopped this recording. We are seriously close to our 100th episode, and we still haven't made an announcement about that. I'm going to drop something on Facebook tonight. Seriously, I'm meeting the dudes in a little bit. We're going to talk it over. I'm going to make an announcement tonight. And probably add a mention of it to the end of this episode as well. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, exactly. Very interesting. Anyway, you've probably noticed by now this is another solo mission. And the reason for that is that this is largely a lost serial that I'm covering today. Today I will be reviewing The Faceless Ones. It's a 6-episode arc. And only 2 of those 6 episodes are still intact. So what I've watched, really, is the Loose Cannon Productions reconstruction of this serial, plus the 2 episodes that are completely intact, and that I strongly urge that you have a look at as well. As on prior occasions, Loose Cannon Productions starts this recon off with an intro, and in this case, they sit down with Annika Wills, who played Polly. And Annika Wills talks about basically saying goodbye to the show. Because this is, if you didn't know it already, this is the last time that we will see Polly and Ben on Doctor Who. And she claims at first to have been asked to stay on, but then narrates a little mini-documentary about the Faceless Ones in which she says Ben and Polly were phased out. Which, by the way, was obviously the case. Oh, poor Annika Wills. I feel bad for her now. Partly for her, the potential reality that befell her. And partly for how she's made to read something on air that directly contradicts what she said a moment earlier when she spoke from the heart, you know?
They came to me and said, we would like you to continue as a companion with Jamie, and we're going to phase Ben out of the story. At this time, the production team decided that regular companions, Ben and Polly, were not working well, and writers Ellis and Hulk were asked to write them out.
The intro is awesome, though. Will shares loads of trivia about the production, the actors, the props, etc., including, I think most interestingly, that the plot of Rose, the first episode of New Who, of the Doctor Who revival, was partly based on the original draft of this story, wherein the Chameleons had taken over a department store as the Autons had done in Rose, sort of. Anyway, I'll definitely embed that intro into this episode's page on whobackwhen.com, so absolutely please do yourselves a favor and check that out. It's totally worth it. Before we jump into this serial, let's do a bite-sized chunk of Who.
Bite-sized chunk of Who.
Doc and PB&J, that's Polly, Ben and Jamie, materialise on a runway at Gatwick Airport, where Polly immediately bears witness to a murder, and the gang soon discover that something is seriously wrong with an airline called Chameleon Tours. Slowly but surely, they uncover an alien plot to kidnap thousands of young humans. Will they save the day? Won't they save the day? You'll have to either watch the 6 episodes or listen to this review to find out. B-Scow over, you are welcome. Very, very short B-Scow there, sorry about that. Anyway, let's jump into this serial with episode 1. This episode is intact, people, and explosively watchable, so give it a Google and you'll probably find it on Dailymotion, as I did. Only drawback, by the way, is the weird selection of ads on Dailymotion. I've had everything from US insurance companies to breast implant adverts on there, and very abruptly too, as in like mid-episode, very startling, especially when you're watching an app on public transport. And I'm neither American nor the proprietor of tits, diminutive or otherwise, so I'm not sure how they pick their sponsors, whatever. Tangent over. You can find this episode online is what I'm trying to say. In fact, effort, I might even embed all classic episodes I can find on whobackwhen.com at some point. Go to whobackwhen.com now! Depending on copyright laws and when you're listening to this review, I may have gone back and retconned that already. So we open the serial, and indeed, we'll be spending nigh on all of it at Gatwick Airport. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, Gatwick is, I believe, the 2nd largest airport in London, after Heathrow. or maybe the third largest after Heathrow and Stansted, no matter. Also, I'm not entirely sure what the situation was in 1967. It's an airport, is what I'm trying to say. We've got planes flying up ahead. This is not some other world with weird tentacle women or a parallel underwater dimension populated by salamander dudes with larvae dicks in their ears trying to manipulate the world into submission through delta waves or what have you. This is fucking London. And immediately the gang runs off. A, because they're about to be squished by a plane, and B, because a police officer spots them on the runway and chases after them. And let's put a pin in that. And while we do, let's point out that hitherto, they have materialized on strange worlds and never, or almost never anyway, have they just run away from the locals. I mean, the locals are generally really welcoming, but a cop in what must be 1960s London is apparently super scary. We also get a cutscene of two motorbike cops that look like something out of a dystopian future. Anyway, pin. The TARDIS is hauled off and the gang splits up, with Ben going somewhere. Doc and Jamie hiding from cops together while Jamie goes on about the planes being flying beasties, and Polly popping into a conveniently unlocked hangar, sporting a spoilerific sign for Chameleon Tours, which is pretty foreboding, in much the same way as the Druid and I discussed in a past bonus episode, possibly one of the Capaldi retrospectives, I can't really remember. You know, like when you call a spaceship the Titanic, or the Hindenburg, hint hint for an upcoming Who Back When project in 2016, or actually also reminiscent of something Flapjack and I discussed in our Hartnell reviews, our first Doctor reviews. You know how in Classic Who, more so than in New Who, it seems as though they'd visit places named after their primary characteristics, like the desert planet Aridius, for example. Here it's called Chameleon Tours because, spoilers, the aliens are chameleon-esque. Why the F would they call their front that, though? Like, what level of geeky shitbag in their evil logistics department came up with that idea? Just imagine the process that led up to that choice. I did some Wikipediaing about this place, and it turns out there's a lizard that in the public consciousness is only famous for doing sort of what we're planning to do, spoiler alert. They're called chameleons, and that means literally nothing to us because we're from a different planet altogether, but this is the least fuck-you-y of the names that I've thought of so far. You know, at first I wanted to call this Pied Piper Air, or We're Actually Aliens, No Lie, Airlines, or Ryanair after Ryan Quanten, who co-starred in True Blood, which also sucked. My point is, at some stage, Mr. Senior Bad Guy Chameleon Honcho, he will have signed off on that, which just boggles the mind. Whatevs. I need to speed up a bit. Polly steps into the hangar and hides as a dude with a ray gun approaches another dude without a ray gun. Dude with ray gun says,
I would advise you to stop.
And shoots him. So, actually, that was terrible advice. That was awful advice. So, Mr. Bad Advice steps next door to a hidden control room and calls Captain Blade, which is a name the writer took straight from the big book of bad guy names, and sees on CCTV that Polly is in the adjacent room and clearly saw everything. Yada yada, he tries to catch her, but she escapes and meets up with Doc and Jamie, who immediately goes,
I just seen a man killed!
By one of the beasties!
Which is like, ugh, just annoying. Jamie still thinks the planes are murderous monsters. Has he not noticed that he's hiding underneath one? Also, Doc tells her to show him the dead body, so the Doc and PJ run to the scene of the murder. So let's go back to that pin I dropped earlier. They ran away from the police at the start, now they're running to the scene of an effing murder. Makes no sense. Cut back to the Ryanair hangar, where Mr. Bad Advice has been joined by Blade, and we learn that the murdered chap from before was a detective called Detective Inspector Gascoigne, and that Spence, that's Mr. Bad Advice, killed him because he found out about the postcards. Wonder what that can be about. We'll see. We'll find out about that later on. Probably another really clever cog in the majestic machinery of the diabolical scheme, no doubt. Doc, Jamie and Polly turn up on the CCTV now again, checking out the dead body on the floor and identifying the cause of death as being electrocution. And we get this gem of a soundbite from the Ryans.
He looks like a normal being.
More intelligent than most. He's a threat to our operation.
Note that at this point, all they've really witnessed the Doc do is walk upright and form coherent sentences. He didn't discover a cure for acne or solve a Rubik's Cube with his bow tie and nuts. How low must their opinion of us be? And that being said, they still decide that Polly is the one they need to silence because she might finger them, figuratively, as the killers have said electrocuted dude. So one thing leads to another, and when our intrepid protagonists are heading to the authorities, it's another hurrying back to the Fuzz, by the way. And Doc and Jamie aren't looking, they nab Polly and question her. Soundbites!
Got nothing to do with the airport. We just arrived. We were lost. I was trying to find someone to help me, and I saw him kill a man.
Polly basically does her best to explain why killing her would be no threat to them at all. She's just arrived, she isn't affiliated with the airport, she got lost, i.e. was somewhere no one would be expected to look for her, and she witnessed one of them kill a dude. Why not just say, shit, yeah, I'm affiliated with the airport, I'm part of a massive stakeout on Chameleon Tours, and I'm expected to be back at HQ in 2 minutes, or they'll bomb this hangar. That might liven those stiffs up a bit. Blah, blah, blah. DJ have now noticed that they've lost Polly, and they try to get to someone in charge, but alas, encounter a Kafka-esque obstacle in the form of Jenkins, a chap working the immigration and customs desk at Gatwick Airport. Trivia alert! Jenkins is played by Chris Tranchell, whom we've met on Doctor Who before, in the role of Roger Colbert in The Massacre of St. Bartholomew's Eve, and who would later appear as a Gallifreyan guard alongside Tom Baker in The Invasion of Time. I'll pop some screenshots of both of those on the side as well. Boom. Mic drop. We then get a tiny cutscene of Ben stumbling into the Ryanair hangar only to see Mr. Bad Guy Name sealing a huge crate shut, with hammer and nail and all, and leaving. So this is interesting. Blade, Captain Bad Guy Name, is a captain. He's wearing captain's stripes. He's swinging a big floppy dong as far as careers are concerned. Pretty sure he shouldn't have to wield a hammer as part of his job. And secondly, this cutscene is really just there to show us that Ben is still around, even though, let's face it, he's being phased out in this episode in favor of Jamie. Anyway, Jenkins finally takes DJ to the Commandant, who's the old chap running Gatwick Airport, and who, even though pretty sure I literally just said this, he's the chap running the whole effing airport, then follows them to the Ryanair hangar to see this alleged body. Cut to Ryanair, the uncomfortable airline of pure evil, where we're treated to a few lovely little tidbits. First off, Bad Guy Name is sticking stamps on postcards. Very important detail. Zwei. Polly has apparently been, quote, processed, unquote, and is going on the next flight. Shazam! Doc, Jamie, and the chap who runs the whole fucking airport is and whose absence from his office slash control room apparently goes wholly unnoticed, enter and find no dead body. Bingo. Back at Good Guy HQ, DJ suddenly see Polly approach, but she claims to be someone completely different. Can't remember the name she now has, but she claims to be Swiss anyway, and apparently has no recollection of them whatsoever. Let's put a pin in that as well. And kablamo, Bad Guy Name opens a fridge, and we get to see Bad Guy Name and Mr. Bad Advice take a grosso, scaly, skinless humanoid creature out of a fridge, dress it in a trench coat and hat like a spy and or flasher, and escort him across the entire goddamn airport to the medical center miles away without anyone noticing. End of episode 1, episode 2. Definitely speeding up henceforth, but heads up, there are tons of trivia points to drop in this one. We get to see the skinless flasher being escorted by Mr. Bad Guy Name and Mr. Bad Advice again. You wouldn't have to transport a conspicuous-looking faceless alien across Gatwick if you didn't hide your alien machine at the goddamn hospital, you massive toolbags. Anyway, let's do a body switch now, because at the medical center, which is run by only one person, Nurse Pinto, there are two beds. Upon one lies Meadows, an air traffic controller, and upon the other lies the, what do we call, the scaly grosso. Let's call him a faceless one. Fairly appropriate. They press some buttons, attach high-tech armbands to both Meadows and the faceless grosso, and slowly but surely, faceless dude is made to look like Meadows. Bingo. Not sure if that's totally clear to you, ladies and gents in podcast land. Oh, if there were only some sort of lizard whose mimicking abilities I could use as a simile in this context. Bada bing! We cut to Doc and Jamie making a run for it because the authorities think they're bonkers schizoids. And even Ben joining them now, so he's still alive. Then, not Polly, i.e. Chameleon Polly, I think you understand by now, shows up, suddenly working the Ryanair desk and pulling a total keys of Marinus.
If I'd seen anyone shot, I'd have gone to the police.
Anyone shot?
Murdered.
I didn't say anyone was shot or murdered, Polly.
Look, please, will you just leave me alone?
It's so weird, though, because why is Chameleon Polly playing the part of a new person? Meadows, we just learned, by the way, not sure if I mentioned this, he was chameleoned along with his whole personality and his memories and everything. So the Chameleon Meadows would blend in. So if I were them, I'd get Polly to play along and lure them backstage where I'd have them killed or chameleoned as well. Makes no sense. Enter Detective Inspector Crossland, stage left at Gatwick Airport to investigate Ryanair specifically, along with his missing colleague D.I. Gascoigne. Trivia alert, Crossland is played by Bernard Kay, whom we've seen on Doctor Who twice before. First in The Dalek Invasion of Earth as Tyler, aka Tyler Durden, and then in The Crusade as Saladin. And he'll actually return in Colony in Space alongside John Pertwee as well. Bernard Kay, what a ledge! And enter stage right, a woman named Samantha Briggs pops up and chats with Chameleon Polly about her brother, Brian Briggs, who, it turns out, went on a Ryanair trip to Rome and sent her a dum-dum-dum postcard from there, and who has since then gone missing. No dice, home slice, says Chameleon Polly, and Samantha Briggs sits down next to Jamie, who immediately gets a boner under his kilt, and volunteers his and the doctor's assistance in the case of her missing brother. Trivia alert again. We've already talked about this on Who Back When before, in our review of the David Tennant episode Tooth and Claw. But let's recap. Pauline Collins, who played Samantha, had the option of being a companion, but she opted out because she got a better deal elsewhere. Sam Briggs is super annoying, by the way. Reminds me of Dodo, actually. Enormous hat, too. Anyway, the trivia is threefold. Is it threefold? Might be twofold. I have no idea. Here goes. A. Samantha Briggs was originally named Mary Dawson, and then Cleopatra Briggs, or Cleo for short, but was eventually called Samantha, aka Sam. And B. Pauline Collins would later return to Doctor Who as Queen Victoria in Tooth and Claw. Pretty cool. So yeah, it was twofold. Boom, cutscene of Doc still not being able to convince the Commandant and making another run for it, but this time we also get to meet the Commandant's secretary, Jean Rock. Awesome name, by the way. And wait for it, trivia alert again. So here are a couple of really cool things. First off, holy moly, here's a bit of trivia about her that's super fan. I think it's fair to call him a super fan. S-Gamer82, Steven, submitted via Twitter. She's played by Benedict Cumberbatch's mum, Wanda Wentham. Say what? Thanks for sharing that bit of trivia, Dude Meister. Awesome. Here are a couple more things about Benedict Cumberbatch's mum that you may not have known, ladies and gentlemen. Namely, she returned to Doctor Who 10 years later in Image of the Fendal with Tom Baker, and then an additional 10 years later in Time and the Rani with Sylvester McCoy. In fact, in Time and the Rani, she appeared alongside Donald Pickering, who's the chap playing Captain Blade, aka Captain Bad Guy name, in this serial. So circular trivia, cell 5. Back to the episode. Shit, I really have to speed up, or we will be here all night. Okay, let's bullet point this bad boy. Number 1. Not Polly tells Sam that her brother did arrive in Rome safe and sound, and Sam starts to piece together shit in her mind hole. Number 2. Ben pops into the Ryanair hangar again and finds the real Polly in a trance, in a box. By the way, why don't they lock the hangar door? Clearly anyone can just walk in and see their alien goings on. Next bullet point, Doc goes to the hangar as well and steps into the control room where, on the same CCTV as before, he sees A. Mr. Bad Advice himself freeze Ben with a weapon shaped like a bullet vibrator, and B. a stack of postcards from places around the world with a bunch of foreign stamps. Yep, you've probably gathered what their shitty, shitty plan is now as well, ladies and gents. Next bullet point, Doc somehow gets his hands on the freezing bullet vibrator. And meanwhile, Sam totes wants a piece of Jamie's bone. So the Ryanair desk is now manned by someone else. No sign of Chameleon Polly anywhere, and this is where we get confirmation of the postcard plot. The new attendant, or desk clerk, or whatever you call them, hands out pre-stamped postcards to passengers of the next flight, a flight to Zurich, for them to write messages to their loved ones on. In fact, telling them to write, I've just arrived in Zurich, safe and sound. Like, what the fuck? So they don't even fake the postcards. I think it was pretty suspicious if I were about to go on a trip and I were told to fake having gone there already by the people allegedly hired to take me there. Anyway, Sam now figures it out, and in fact, let's soundbite this.
Look, a postcard of Zurich, stamped with a Swiss stamp, all ready to post.
Well?
Oh, you're a right one, aren't you? Don't you see, this could explain the card I got from Brian. It was posted in Rome, but that doesn't mean to say that he posted it.
So there you have it. We end the episode with Doc opening another box, only to find the real Meadows in there, the real air traffic controller trap from before. Then Doc is lured and sealed into the adjacent room, just as a freezing gas starts seeping in through the walls. End of episode 2, but before you go into episode 3, trivia alert. An earlier draft of the script actually called for both Doc and Ben to be caught in the room, and instead of freezing gas, they were to be caught under a falling engine of some sort. Whoa, very intense. Okay, I'm ready now. Episode 3! Another super intact episode. Whoop! And with less trivia than episode 2, so this one I'm definitely speeding through. Doc manages to escape last week's cliffhanger by using the freezer vibrator on Mr. Bad Advice. And now Inspector Crossland, formerly Tyler Durden and Saladin, is backing up Doc, Jamie and Samantha as they put their case to the Commandant. And while Blade is heading off to pilot a flight to Zurich, Sam and Jamie head off to go to the never-locked Ryanair Hangar of Doom. At which point we get this nugget of 1967 sexism.
Well, as suppose it would be better if I had a man with me.
Aye.
D.I. Crossland's all but convinced now, and Doc tries to prove his point by showing the vibrator, freeze pen weapon thingy, to Chameleon Meadows, who's now actually taken over the real Meadows job at Good Guy HQ. But Meadows, Chameleon Meadows that is, runs off and Doc doesn't give a shit, which I don't understand. He has an alien weapon. He wants to prove that Meadows is an alien. Why let him run off? Why not actually use the vibrator weapon on him? Or on anyone for that matter? Like, oh, Commandant, you don't believe me? Here, I'm going to freeze your balls. Now do you believe me? Right, that would have done the trick in no time at all. But the Doc gives a bit of a half-assed good guy performance here, instead just freezing a teacup and letting Meadows run away without saying a word. What a goddamn dilettante. And this is indicative of almost the only criticism I have of this serial, by the way, apart from the stupid plot holes and the inane plan to kidnap kids on their gap years with an elaborate airline and postcard plan, when the aliens clearly have the technology to just, you know, take people. Namely, that a lot of this serial is just stalling for time. Episodes 2 and 3 could pretty much be condensed into one single episode. Many of the scenes don't progress the storyline at all, like this one, for example. Doc clearly has the evidence he needs, but he doesn't use it until, spoilers, a little later when we get a reenactment of the exact same scene with the exact same characters all over again, and Doc finally uses the vibrator weapon as leverage against Chameleon Meadows. Ugh, ranting. To the point where I'm actually losing my breath. Sorry about that. My point is, this scene has no point. Then we get this line flub.
I believe comedian tours to be merely a front.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's a line flub anyway. Sounds to me like he's saying comedian tours instead of chameleon tours. Doesn't matter anyway. And then, continuing the theme of let's repeat lots of plot points ad nauseum, Sam finds a bunch of signed and stamped postcards in the Ryanair office and takes them to Doc and the Commandant. But we've already had that happen. Or rather, we've already had A, the revelation of their evil plan, and B, the discovery of those self-same postcards before. Why weren't those postcards already in the hands of the authorities? Alright, so now the Commandant believes Doc and Co. and gives them carte blanche to go fuck with whomever at Gatwick they want for 12 hours. Boom. Good guys are going to win. For a second there I had my doubts. Bullet point time again. Chameleon Meadows returns and furtively pops a secret spy tech weapon the size of a button on the Doc. Doc and Jamie go full-on Ramones on the Ryanair office and tear it to shit when suddenly the button weapon is activated and renders Doc unconscious. Then D.I. Crossland, of formerly Tyler and Saladin fame, goes to see Mr. Bad Guy Name aboard the Ryanair plane. And Mr. Bad Guy Name apprehends him, and in mid-air, he and we get to see a pan across the entire length of the Ryanair plane, and all of the passengers all of a sudden having vanished. Although, how do they have a camera pan of the interior of the plane? It's like all those shots of the outside of spaceships and planets blowing up and whatever on Star Trek, you know. Who's holding that camera? Why is there a camera there at all? Anyway, end of episode 3, episode 4. Okay, truthfully, I don't remember if this happened at the end of episode 3 or at the start of episode 4, but my first note for this ep is Super James Bond intro. So at some point, Sam turned up as well, and she and Jamie were both frozen alongside the dock hammer. And now the three of them are lying on the floor, paralyzed, as a laser beam very slowly moves towards them. It's so James Bondy. They may as well be slowly lowered into a pool of sharks with frickin' lasers attached to their heads. Anyway, they use Sam's lady mirror to reflect the laser back onto itself and escape. Sam goes to spy on the Ryanair desk, even though surely we've had enough of that already, and we get a cutscene of Nurse Pinto turning Jenkins, the customs officer formerly known as Roger Colbert, into a chameleon chap. Shazam! More repetitious nonsense as... Yeah, this is officially going to be my excuse for speeding through the rest of this review, I think. Because, shitting hell, this is so circuitous, I just feel like the BBC are stalling for time because the next serial set is still being built or something. Because Doc and Jamie try to infiltrate the medical center now, but instead just leave when it's clear Ford Pinto won't let them see the X-ray room. But do they return with the cavalry? No. And Mr. Bad Advice once again sees them on the CCTV, but does he do anything about it? No. Back at Good Guy HQ, Jean Rock, Sherlock's mum, tells us that she's just checked with various airports around the world, and no Ryan airplanes have ever actually arrived anywhere. And this is how they find out? What the fuck? I will never trust Gatwick Airport or Ryanair again. Not that I trusted more than 50% of those two before anyway. Some secretary, no disrespect intended, has to phone up airports to check this. Airports don't just immediately send out an emergency broadcast when a fucking plane goes missing. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention earlier, we learned that, whatever, like X miles outside of Gatwick, all Ryanair planes suddenly disappear off radar, and no one has reacted to this. What the shit? If that's even remotely similar to something that happened even once out of the ordinary, at some airport anywhere in the world, then I'm never getting on a plane again. This is ridiculous. Bullet point alert. Sherlock's mom pretends to have a touch of the vapors and feigns fainting to lure Nurse Pinto into the medical center.
But I'm not supposed to leave here.
Because apparently there's just one nurse looking after all of Gatwick Airport. Samantha buys a Ryanair ticket because she wants to go rogue and infiltrate the heinous organization on her own. But Jamie kisses her and slyly slides two fingers into her purse and steals the tickets. Kidding aside though, this may be the first kiss on Doctor Who ever.
Bing bong. No, it's not. Bing bong.
Am I wrong about that? Am I right? If you know the answer, please pop a comment about it on this episode page on whobackwhen.com.
Bing bong, Future Punkin here. Nope, this is not entirely true. Vicky kissed Troilus in the William Hartnell serial, The Mythmakers. In fact, she left Doctor Who. She left the show in order to stay there so that she could, you know, bone down with Troilus. Yeah. Okay, back to the show, bing bong.
Regardless, I will be including a screenshot of this famous kiss, I think famous kiss, between Jamie and Samantha on the site. Next bullet point. Doc now pulls a total Dr. Ben Carson, which is hilarious. Oh, well, I mean, it's hilarious that Ben Carson is still in the runnings as a Republican presidential candidate. But this is pretty fun, too. Doc pops into the medical center, steals a couple of those high-tech armbands we saw earlier, and is about to be ray-gunned to smithereens by Chameleon Jenkins when suddenly some poor civilian shows up in need of medical attention. And the doc just goes...
The guy comes in, puts the gun in my ribs, and I just said, I believe that you want the guy behind the counter.
Sorry, I mean...
I'm just going off duty, but this gentleman will be pleased to attend to you.
And plops back out, leaving some poorly passenger at the mercy of Jenkins, who, by the way, as far as I'm aware, has no medical training. Boom. Skipping some pointless repetitious cutscenes that lead nowhere. Next up, Sam is trying to get on board of the next Ryanair flight but doesn't have a ticket, obvi, and is suddenly under threat of ray gunning by Mr. Bad Advice. The Ryanair flight takes off. By the way, Ryanair... Please don't sue me, this is all in good fun. Anyway, the plane takes off, now with an RAF fighter tailing it, and Jamie's on board, but he goes to puke in the lavatory, or he's hoping to join the Mile High Club or something. Either way, everyone's processed and disappears. Spoiler alert, they're miniaturized, except for him. And this is how we saw the pan across the empty plane before, or rather, why we saw the pan across the empty plane before. Kablamo! Captain Bad Guy Name lasers the RAF fighter jet out of the sky, then we get a pretty cool cutscene, nicely done in the recon, by the way, Loose Cannon Productions, well done, of the plane turning into a spaceship, sort of, leaving the Earth's atmosphere, and then entering a giant space base orbiting the Earth that apparently no one with a telescope or eyeballs has noticed is there. End of episode 4, episode 5. Jamie's now being caught by the chameleons on the space station. While back on Earth, the authorities note that the plane has disappeared entirely and that their investigations have led them to deduce that the RAF pilot, who, need I remind you, was in a jet fighter that was lasered to shit, exploded, and then crashed to the Earth, that he was electrocuted. How did they find that out? No idea. Either way, the commandant still doesn't believe the doctor. He still needs proof. And this is despite him having given the doctor carte blanche very, very recently. So now, after myriad opportunities to use alien tech against them, the Dockmeister goddamn finally approaches Chameleon Meadows, whom, by the way, he's just allowed to continue, quote-unquote, doing his job as air traffic controller despite the missing planes and the kidnapped youngsters and the detonated RAF pilots. And he threatens to use one of the armbands on him. And we learn that the armbands control the chameleon effect, and that by manipulating the armbands correctly, or incorrectly as it were, the human original would wake up again and the faceless Grosso would die. Intense. Meadows also confirms the whole space station thing and exposits that some solar catastrophe or something on their planet robbed them of their identities, and that they've already kidnapped 50,000 human youngsters to assume their identities. Now, okay, let's talk about the 50,000 thing in a second. First off, I'm not sure what that means. Like, they do have identities. I mean, one faceless Grosso is distinguishable on an idiosyncratic level from another, right? I think he's just saying that they were burned beyond visual recognition and, like, have no skin or dicks anymore, but surely that doesn't mean that they need to steal the looks of other people, especially as it's only going to last while the originals are in stasis somewhere. It seems to me that using tech to regrow skin would be a whole lot less convoluted than kidnapping and miniaturizing human kids. Seriously. And as far as the 50,000 human youngsters,
what I said before about Jean Rock, Sherlock's mum, having to dial up people in various countries and go, hey, by the way, did that plane we sent off from Gatwick, did that ever arrive? That was ridiculous on its own merit. Now bear in mind that there are 50,000 kids missing. 50,000, all of whom took off from fucking Gatwick, and no one has raised an eyebrow except one super annoying chick who just wants to snog Jamie. Ridiculous. Anyway, on that note, loads of originals are actually hidden somewhere at Gatwick Airport, because reasons. Off they all go to the medical center now, where it turns out Samantha is about to be chameleoned by Ford Pinto, but is saved in the nick of time by the Doc and Co. Pinto goes next door for no reason whatsoever, as in, sorry, her reasons are pretty clear, she's getting a ray gun to fend herself with, and in fact kills a policeman, but you know what, like, fuck him, because what kind of policeman allows an alien murder suspect to just go into the adjacent room by herself? Ugh, or amateur. Meadows finds her original in the medical center though, and deactivates her original's armband, which, yuck, leads Chameleon Pinto to dissolve into a puddle of gloopy barf on the floor. Aboard the satellite, D.I. Crossland of former Tyler and Saladin fame reveals himself to Jamie as Chameleon Crossland, or rather, as the director, the leader of the Chameleons, which, I'll save it for my closing statement. We learn that there'll just be one more Ryanair flight this season, and Doc now devises a plan. Sneakily, he and the real Ford Pinto pretend to be their Chameleon counterparts, and get on board the plane with Captain Bad Guy name piloting it. Bing bong. The plane disappears off the radar now as well, so they're in space. While back at Gatwick, there's like the biggest search ever going on, as there's even a public announcement for all members of staff at the airport to help out, in brackets, in retrieving the metric nut ton of originals who are hidden away somewhere in the airport. Then we end the ep back at the space station with, dum dum dum, Chameleon Jamie, who oddly speaks without a Scots accent now, which leads me to believe that they don't take on the full characteristics or identity of the originals. What, like, why did they give him an English accent, though? Wouldn't that entail more work on their part? And why does Chameleon Jamie still remember everything Jamie remembers, including, one presumes, how wet Sam was when he pilfered her Ryanair tickets a couple of episodes ago? Anyway, the jig is up, and it turns out Captain Bad Guy named Nose, Doc Hammer, and Ford Pinto are imposters, and the ep ends with them being captured by the director, aka Chameleon Crossland, and a bunch of faceless grossos. End of episode 5, episode 6, the final episode of this serial. Turns out, the aliens want the Doctor's brain now, because apparently he's super clever, evidence of which I have yet to see in the serial. The proceedings in this episode are so repetitious that I could easily summarize it in a handful of bullet points, and I feel like the recurrent plot points here were in my opinion, a rather failed attempt at creating tension. Allow me to explain. Doc is now strapped to a machine that's going to bone his brain in the arse or something, and he starts telling the Chameleons that the director's safe, but that since everyone else's original is back on Earth, and, he lies, they've already located all of said originals, it's just a matter of time before they all disintegrate. As in, before all the faceless grossos you get what I mean. Unless, obviously, they let him go and cooperate. They don't buy it, though. They say he's stalling, which is true. The Commandant's on the radio trying to buy time as well, and we get to see the search continuing at Gatwick with no success. And then, we go through those points over and over again, for the duration of almost the entire episode. Doc tries the same spiel, they don't buy it, no one's found the originals yet, rinse and repeat. Doc even sabotages the brain-boning machine somehow, and they just roll another one in like a goddamn high school overhead projector, and we get the same few plot points over again. Anyway, Sam and Sherlock's mum finally discover the originals, they're in cars parked at the airport. That's it, by the way, the grand alien plan, the same one that based its whole alibi on fake postcards that I'm not sure they ever even proofread. Like, one of the passengers could have written, actually, we're being told to write this before takeoff, anyway, see you when I get back. Fuck it, what I'm trying to say is, that same plan culminates with them hiding their victims in a car park where two chicks, one of whom is still dripping from a taste of Scotsman, can just stumble upon them. It is such bullshit. Ugh. The authorities now deactivate Jenkins' armband. Jenkins was the Kafkaesque customs officer in the beginning, formerly of Roger Colbert fame. And Chameleon Jenkins consequently flops into a pool of barf in space. And now all of the Chameleons turn against the director, assuming that they're next to go. In fact, Captain Bad Guy name, Blade, pops a cap in his ass. A deal is struck whereby all human originals are going to be returned to their original size and to Earth, and the Doc will help the Chameleons get their, identities, i.e. faces and dicks back, as long as they get the F out of there pronto. Bada bing, back on Earth now and about to end this serial, The Commandant agrees to return the TARDIS to the Doctor, which is pretty important for the next serial. We get some awkward goodbyes, including this one from the Commandant to Jamie.
Goodbye, Scotty.
As well as another kiss between Captain Kiltboner and voluntarily not a regular companion on the show, Samantha Goddamn Briggs. And for the first time in ages, we get to see Ben and Polly again, as the gang is reunited, except, trivia alert, this scene was actually pre-recorded, so Ben and Polly, it turns out, left the show 2 or 3 episodes ago, and no one told us about it. Anyway, they decide that because it's the exact same day as when they boarded the TARDIS at the end of the War Machines, they'd quite like to stay. And Doc agrees. Check out a review of the War Machines, by the way. I did that one with fellow co-hosts JD and Nicolelli. Good fun. So we get a little bit of a goodbye, and that's sort of it. It's just sort of tossed aside, along with the two now former companions, Ben and Polly, very undramatically. They volunteer to help the Doc and Jamie with anything they need before they take off, but Doc declines the offer. And then immediately, as soon as BP have left, we learn that the TARDIS has been stolen, and DJ set off to look for it without Ben and Polly. They're right there, probably not even a 30-second jog away, and they offer to help, but Doc and Jamie decide they've had enough of those two companions and blatantly ignore it. Seems pretty unreasonable to me. End of The Faceless Ones.
Review.
Okie dokie, let's start with some pros. That's pro, and then an S to denote the plural. Most of the acting here is great. I love the Commandant and his naivety. Crossland is a total badass, but then again I admired Bernard Kay in his role as Tyler Durden in The Dalek Invasion of Earth, and even as Saladin in The Crusade, despite the super racist blackface. Bernard Kay is a total legend. What a ledge. Okay, I'll stop jerking him off now, though. Who else was good? Donald Pickering. Was that his name? I think that's his name. The chap who played Captain Blade. He was evil on a par with Hiss from Disney's Robin Hood. Loved it. And of course, Doc and the Companions. Which leads me to bullet point number 2. The Doctor's great as per usual. I'm really enjoying Troughton. Not much has changed there. The Companions, though, is where this episode starts to, well, reach a divide for me. Ben and Polly were so obviously phased out of this one. It's a real shame. I loved them on the show. They were great companions, almost. Yes, I'm going to say it, almost as good as Barbara and Ian, although obviously not as good. While Jamie, totes comes into his own and goes on solo missions and kisses annoying chicks and whatnot, I really feel like Ben and Polly were straight up shafted in this one. They didn't really get the goodbye they deserved. When Babs and Ian left, they got a goddamn montage of happiness to show that they were, you know, going to be alright, and we got a monologue from Hartnell about how much he'd missed them. Here we get a very quick one-line reference from Troughton about him being jealous he never got to go back to his planet. And then Ben and Polly just plop off. Basta. As for Samantha Briggs? Shit, man. Thank God she didn't join the cast on a regular basis. What an annoying character. Next up, the aliens. The aliens are pretty awesome. I love the idea of them kidnapping humans and whatever, and I think it's pretty cool that they're compelled by, to some degree, moral reasons. As in, they want to save their own race, right? And as they view humans to be little more than animals, what they're doing is almost at a massive stretch. Legit. Their plan, though, is absolute pants. It's so dumb. I mean, so dumb. And I know so many bad guy plots are pretty inane in Classic Who, and in New Who for that matter as well. And that's all right. But more so when it's in space, not when it's set at Gatwick Airport and you can't argue away plot holes with wibbly-wobbly excuses. Because, you know, for shit's sake, you and I all know, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, what a goddamn postcard is. And that makes this less wibbly, less wobbly, and way more shite than most bad guy plans. And we've already had miniaturization plots on the show. In the Ark, for instance. So that's not novel anymore. It's cool, but it's not new. Most of all, though, I've already said this, I'm not a fan of the repetitive nature of some of the episodes. This was a 6-episode arc that could easily have fit into a 3 or 4, well yeah, into 3 or 4 episodes. It's just a little too complicated at times. When Doc got on a plane to the satellite, and when we learned that the final airplane back down had already left, I remember thinking, fuck man, this means I need to wait for that plane to turn around and come back up, and just so that the Doc can get on board, and even then I'm going to have to wait for him to get back to Earth. They should just have trimmed it. I've got a love-hate thing going with this serial, so I'm giving it a 3.4.
Listener Mini.
Shazam, and we have a Listener Mini for this one. It comes from, already mentioned in this episode, SGamer82. Steven. That's right, you get 2 songs in this episode, amigo. Steven sent in a relatively long mini, but I'm going to read it in full. Also, spoiler alert, it is pretty goddamn bombastic. Steven goes, this is the one that could never ever be filmed today. While thinking about the faceless ones, I've come to notice something about my reviews. I think how much I employ what Ponkin calls my big heart tends to be based on how I feel the companions are treated. I enjoyed the otherwise reviled Celestial Toy Maker, partly because the companions were front and center. On the flip side, I was not fond of the War Machines because of how Dodo was taken out of the show. This brings me to perhaps my single biggest sticking point in what is otherwise an all-right episode. While The Faceless Ones does better in regards to Ben and Polly, it still ejects them halfway through the story, only to make a token farewell appearance at the end. In this case, I remember reading it was due to their contract expiring mid-serial. Annika Wills was actually offered to stay on, but declined, so Polly left with Ben. At least they actually got to tell the Doctor goodbye in person and not have Samantha or Jamie deliver a farewell letter. Very, very true. Very true, Stephen. He goes on, as a result of all that, Jamie got a lot of screen time, which I enjoyed, but will agree with Ponkin in his comment from the Macro Terror that it was ham-fisted in. I think this is less true of Macro Terror, but definitely true here. What we did see of him showed some of what I'd hoped for in a companion from the past, such as his remarking that 18th century Scotland is more civilized, or having a small freak out at the side of the plains. Yeah, nice point. Agreed. And also, thank you very much for agreeing with me. Stephen goes on, for the side characters, I think Samantha was originally intended to be a new companion, but the actress turned down the option. That's too bad, as I think she might have made a good TARDIS traveler. Not sure I'm agreeing with you on that one, though. Anyway, he goes on, I'm not as familiar with Polly's successor companion as I'd like, mostly due to a preference for her successor, but what I do remember hearing and seeing, she doesn't have the same feeling of agency as Polly or Sam did. But I could be remembering wrong, and either way, that's a point for later reviews. Given previous episode complaints of just how easily people begin trusting the Doctor, I did like how the Commandant was won over gradually, not becoming a firm ally until incontrovertible proof that the Doctor was right appeared. Super good points. Why did I not think about that? Okay, hang on, I will revisit that after I finish your review. Stephen goes on. For the Chameleons, I think they were a bit of a weak villain in some ways. For a race arrogant enough to call itself the most intelligent in the universe to a Time Lord's face, they didn't seem particularly smart. Unless I misunderstood the ending, their secret hiding place for originals that nobody would think of was a bunch of parked cars. You did not misunderstand that. Further, my favorite part of such arrogant foes is watching them be brought low and break down as they realize they weren't as clever as they thought they were. The kind of comeuppance we got for enemies like Mavic Chen, the Toymaker, or most recently, Professor Zaroff, I didn't really get that feeling here, since the leaders were quickly dispatched and those left simply resigned themselves to the ultimate fate of finding a way to save themselves, and the Doctor won't interfere with that. I also don't feel the episode did a good job of hiding who was and was not a fake, which would have amped up the suspense and paranoia nicely. Very good point. In comparison to the last serial, there was always a looming sense that the Macra were a present threat, even if the true nature of that threat wasn't immediately apparent. All that said, I did like the episode. It was suspenseful, if not as much as I'd preferred, and the Doctor, Jamie, and Sam made a good team as they worked out the mystery. I have the feeling I'm going to be in the minority here, but I have to give this story a 3.2. It's a good story, but in my eyes, marred by a poor exit for Ben and Polly and overall weak-feeling villains. On a final note, given recent events in New Who, does anyone think that the Chameleons were perhaps a precursor to the Zygons that would come in, I think, Tom Baker's era? Awesome mini-review, Stephen. Thank you so much for sending that in. First off, yes, the Zygons first did appear with Tom Baker in Terror of the Zygons. That's many, many years of Doctor Who and probably a good chunk of time of Who Back When away from now as well. I like that juxtaposition. That's very interesting. Yes, that's true. The Zygons, they take over people's identities and personalities, so on and so forth. Yeah, that's very, very possible. Okay, next up, could not agree more with your Dodo leaving Doctor Who reference. Thank God Polly and Ben at the very least got some screen time to say farewell. And I'm sure a lot of people were quite sad to see them go. If Sam had popped up and gone, oh, by the way, I've got this note from Ben and Polly, they've fucked off to hang out with Dildo, I would have been devastated. Yeah. So yeah, very, very good points. And lastly, I have to say, very fair rating. 3.2. I give it a 3.4. Nice one. Thank you so much for sending in your review. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to reread this review for yourselves, then check out the Faceless Ones page on whobackwhen.com. And if you want to tell Stephen what an awesome chap he is, feel free to A, leave a comment in reply to his mini review on whobackwhen.com, and B, goddamn follow the man on Twitter. He deserves it. He is at sgamer82, that is 82, the number. Thank you again, Stephen. Awesome. That's it for now, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for tuning in to Who Back When. Tuning in? Is that how podcasts work? Whatever. Thank you so much for listening. It's been a pleasure ranting in your general direction for about an hour. Join us in future reviews. Our next Classic Who review, unfortunately, is going to be another solo episode. By the way, well, we mostly don't do solo episodes. I most often sit down with a friend or two for a discussion and a debate rather than a monologue. But the next Classic Who is review is going to be another solo mission, and it is of The Evil of the Daleks, the reason for which being that it is another partially lost serial. The next new Who review that we're dropping, in fact, will be recorded tonight. In about half an hour's time, we're going to sit down and record our review of The Runaway Bride, which sees the introduction of Donna Noble, whom I still don't really like. And I'm going to be sitting down with Nick and the Druid for that one. Check that out. Our next Audio Who review, oh, Jesus Christ, JD, you got to come back so that we can record this MFA, is going to be of Wirren Dawn. Still hate it, though admittedly, I have not re-listened to it for about 6 months or so. And Future Punkin, please tell us something about the 100th episode of Who Back When that is very steadily approaching.
Bing bong, it is I, Future Punkin. Hope you're enjoying the show. I was right when I said the 100th episode of Who Back When is steadily approaching. If we discount episode 000, the one where Flapjack and I sat down to introduce the podcast and ourselves in the first place, this solo mission to review The Faceless Ones is our 98th episode. Next week, we're dropping our 99th ep, which will be our review of The Runaway Bride, which, by the way, from my point of view, I literally just recorded with the Druid and Nicolelli. And the week after that, 2 weeks from now, we're dropping our 100th episode. Holy smokes. It's sort of a big deal. I mean, it is, right? And what we've got in store is a little bit out of the ordinary. We're going to be doing a sort of round table meets talk show thing with, hopefully, all the Who Back When co-hosts. So unless logistics or force majeure get in the way, we'll have appearances by the Druid, Nicolelli, the Rawmeister, JD, Flapjack, and me. Pretty sure Mirimu is going to be there as well. Plus, we're hoping to get some bonus special guests on board as well to talk 100 episodes of Who Back When, nearly as many Doctor Who stories reviewed, over a handful of Doctors, tons of companions, and so many wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey aliens, gadgets, and narrative elements. And not just that, we will be dropping both a regular audio version in all the usual places, iTunes and so on and so forth, and have an extended video version on whobackwhen.com as well to show you a little glimpse behind the scenes of the show. So stay tuned for that. I am super excited. Are you excited? I am rock hard right now. Okay, no, I'm not, but I am salivating excessively. Right, 2 weeks, people. Don't go anywhere. Until then, toodle-pip. Now back to the show.
Thank you very much, future me. Again, thanks, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. You've been a treat. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. I am at Ponken. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponken.
Thanks, JD. Let me know what you think of this review. If you agreed or disagreed, I want to know. So say hi, and I promise to say hi back. Catch you next time. Rock on, be rad and excellent to each other, and ciao.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends, no problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's at Who Back When, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who review, New Who review, or, still funny, Audio Who review. Ciao.
Who Back When?